I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Ken, it's a pleasure as always.
Last week, we talked at some length about how to structure a contract of sale. And as a follow-on from that, I thought this week we might put leases under the microscope. Firstly, how does a commercial lease differ from a residential lease?
Okay. In simple terms, the main differences between a commercial lease and a residential lease are that, firstly, your tenants pay the outgoings and maintain the property. When I say outgoings, I mean effectively everything to do with the running of the property. Now, this will include your rates, your insurance, if it's a strata title, a body corporate fee, any of the repairs and maintenance items. And if it's not a retail property, it'll also include the land tax payment as a single holding. Now, if it's a retail, the legislation provides that you cannot recoup land tax from a retail tenant. That's just a quirk in the legislation, and it's pretty much Australia-wide. So commercial leases are structured as what are called net leases, and so therefore the money that you get from the tenant, the rent, whatever you bank each month, you can effectively spend. Whereas with residential, you still have to make sure you keep enough there to pay your rates, insurance, etc. along the way. So you don't really know till the end of the financial year what your net position is with residential, whereas you do as far as commercial is concerned, because the tenant pays the outgoings and, as I said, maintains the property as well. Now, sometimes that maintenance is by way of reimbursement, that they can ring up the managing agent and he or she will organise the repairs, but then they get billed to the tenant on the ensuing monthly invoice that they receive. Now, the second difference is that your leases are generally between 3 to 10 years in length, depending on the size of the property. Obviously, if it's a smaller one, probably more like 3 to 4 years. If it is a larger property, generally runs 5 to 10 years. Whereas with residential, your leases are 6 to 12 months. I mean, you may get something a bit longer. If it's a corporate tenant, they may be happy to sign up for a 12, 18-month, two-year lease if they're housing an executive and that executive has a placement with that firm for, you know, a 2 or 3 year period, they may well sign a longer lease, but that's not the norm. Generally, your leases are 6 months, at the most 12 months. So therefore, you have a tenancy turnover rather than the security of knowing that your tenant is going to be there for at least 3 years or longer with a larger premises. And the third main difference, which is probably one of the key differences, is that if a tenant changes during the currency of the lease with commercial premises, then the outgoing tenant is equally liable for the performance of that lease until it expires. Whereas with residential property, generally what happens is that if a tenant wants to break a lease or transfer a lease, it's their responsibility to find a substitute tenant, but that tenant then takes over the lease. There might be an arrangement where the bond is swapped over in the name of the new party, but the outgoing tenant, the tenant that's leaving, from there on has no responsibility for the performance of the new tenant. Whereas with commercial, when the lease is, the technical term, assigned, the outgoing tenant, be it an individual or a company, has responsibility for performance of that lease until it actually reaches its expiry date. So if If they leave, it's a five-year lease, and they leave after 2 years, the outgoing tenant still is on the hook, along with the new tenant, for the next 3 years. So the beauty is that you have added security. Obviously, you first try and recover it from the current or new tenant, the rent, but failing that, you have still got recourse legally to the outgoing tenant. So that just adds another layer of security as far as you're concerned as a commercial landlord.
Those are significant differences, which would tend to provide greater certainty for commercial landlords. Tell me, what are the basic items included in a commercial lease?
Actually, there are five, probably six key components involved with a commercial lease. Obviously, there is the lease period. Then you have the annual rent. And then you have the section detailing the outgoings that are payable. And then, because of the length of the lease, there will be provision for fixed annual rent increases on each anniversary of the lease. So they're built in. Sometimes they're related to CPI, sometimes they're a fixed percentage. And then there is the security by way of a bond, but more likely with commercial premises, it's actually a bank guarantee, and that has certain advantages. And then most commercial leases will have an option period. So in other words, it'll be a 3x3 lease or a 5x5. Sometimes it's 5 plus 3. In other words, the tenant's saying, look, we can see 5 years out, but maybe when we get to 5 years, we don't want to commit to another five. Let's commit to another three because our business might well be growing. But generally, there's an option period, and at that point, there would be a market review upon exercising the option, which would then set the base for the next period where there will be the same fixed incremental adjustments to the rent based on that new figure set at the option period.
How important is the actual rental figure in all of this?
Well, it's pretty important because this determines the ultimate value of your property going forward. Now, once it's set, it means that your annual increments apply, and what I like to do is, in either instructing the lease or buying an existing lease for a client, is to make sure that these incremental reviews are at least 3.5, maybe 4, but if it's more than that, it's too much. It's just going to get it ahead of the market and cause problems. But 3.5 to 4 is about right. CPI, I never really liked that because CPI fluctuates, but the problem is that even though, let's say, the rent's due to be reviewed on the 1st of June, let's say, 1st of July, what it means is that you can't actually review the rent till you have the CPI figure because it refers to the quarter immediately preceding the review compared to what it was 12 months earlier. Now, the 30th of June quarter, which is the one immediately preceding the 1st of July, doesn't become available quite often until the 3rd or 4th week of July. So by the time you get it and review it, you may not, sure, it can be backdated, but you can only, you're required to keep charging the old rent through July and maybe August, depending when the CPI figure comes out, before you can actually incrementally increase it and then recoup it from the tenant. So I prefer to have a fixed percentage and then you know exactly you can budget going forward rather than having to guess what the CPI would be. But having said that, your year one rental, if you're negotiating a new lease, is not as important as what your rent will be at the point of sale. So what you need to think about is where you are in the current property cycle for commercial property. And at the moment, my feeling is that we're going to peak somewhere around 2019, 2020, maybe 2021, because the global financial crisis has moved the market sideways. And, you know, it's been static, neither rising nor, in some cases, it's fallen. But it's delayed, if you like, the peak, which probably before that you might have thought might have been in 2017, 2018. But I suspect it's been pushed forward at least 2, probably 3 years. So, therefore, if you had a market review in 2018 or early 2019, that would be ideal. So if you had a lease falling due with an option to be exercised around in 2018, 2019, that would be a perfect point of time, because the market will be increasing, nearing the peak. You won't be at the peak. You review the rent, and then you have you're in the delightful position that you can decide what you want to do. Now, if it's a 5-year lease and it's renewed at the end of 2018, that's going to take you through to 2023. So in other words, if the peak is in 2020, it enables you to straddle that period where if it peaks, it might come off a bit and then it'll start to come back again, so that your lease will straddle that period if you want to hold onto the property. However, if you renew the rent 2018, 2019, and it's a brand new rent, new tenant, or not a new tenant, but the existing tenant who's already been there for 5 years, 4 or 5 years, whatever the lease is, you could actually sell the property, and an incoming purchaser who's not quite as savvy as you would be in understanding cycles would think, well, look, you know, there's a lot of blue sky ahead here. It's a brand new lease, 5 years to run, perfect investment. Now, sometimes the blue sky's more important and proves to be more valuable than the reality. So, you know, if they think that the market's going to continue on forever, that's fine. It won't. I'm not suggesting it's going to collapse, but, you know, we do reach a peak and then it comes off and then we come back again. But you always want to leave something in for the next person. So even if you might say, look, I could have hung on for another 12 months. Look, you don't worry about that. It's very difficult to sell into a falling market with commercial property and even residential property. With shares, it's different. All you've got to do is adjust your price and you'll always find a buyer. But once the market peaks, people are wary. They want to wait till they feel it's either bottomed out or close to the bottom before they buy in again. So all I'm saying is that understand the cycles, and therefore you don't get bent out of shape on your ingoing rent. You might, when I say that, you might not lower the rent, fix the rent at an appropriate figure, but grant them 1, 2, 3 months rent free, depending on the length of the lease. Because the important thing is that with the adjustments, you're going to flow through, and also you're going to pick it up on your market review when the option's exercised. Now, at the moment, you know, what I think you want to aim for, as of right now, would probably be an 8-year lease. So, you know, that would take you through, or 8 to 10 year lease, that would take you through to 2022, 2024, or at least a 4+4 or a 5+5 year lease. Now, if you get an 8 to 10 year lease, you probably want to have a market review midway through. Now, as I said, you might well, if it's a long lease, offer 6 months on a shorter lease, 3 months rent-free at the outset, so as to secure the best lease structure and the timing of your market review down the track. And that's what you're looking at, is you're trying to build in value now for when you actually come to sell.
What about the bond or bank guarantee?
As far as security, I personally prefer a bank guarantee, because you've got total control over that. You'll always try for a 6-month bank guarantee, but don't settle for less than 3 months. And when you've got a longer lease, 8 to 10 years, you may well be able to achieve a 12-month bank guarantee for security.
When can you call upon a bank guarantee, and what can you use it for?
The beauty with a bank guarantee as opposed to a bond is that you can call it up at your behest whenever the tenant falls into or breaches the lease, and that can happen for a number of reasons, as specified in the lease. But generally it's unpaid rent and outgoings under the lease, which you can claim out of the bank guarantee, and you simply present it at the bank and they are obliged to pay you without question, plus any costs incurred to recover further outstanding payments under the lease. It can also cover any necessary repairs after the tenant vacates the property, plus it will also cover your advertising, legal costs, and any leasing incentives that you may be required to offer to secure a replacement tenant. And as I said, the advantage is if you've got a bond, you've got to go through some red tape in getting it released and so forth. The bank guarantee is totally under your control. However, understand that the surplus, if there is any after you've recouped all your costs, that remains on the bank guarantee, you do need to return that to the outgoing tenant. It's there to cover your costs, and you have to do what the legal people talk about is mitigating your loss. You can't just let the property stand vacant. You have to be seen to be re-tenanting the property, advertising, etc. Otherwise, the tenant could challenge you for not mitigating your loss properly, and then you have to refund more than you would normally be entitled to. But other than that, it's a great security.
Do you have a preference for the legal form of the lease being used?
Yeah, look, unlike residential leases, commercial leases can take many forms. And most lawyers generally have their own, what they call pro forma document, which prefers to use. Now, in Melbourne, and I'm sure it's the same in other states, I actually prefer to use the Law Institute lease because it's been very much drawn in the landlord's favour. Now, although it's a pre-printed document, that doesn't mean you cannot add further special conditions to reflect the commercial terms of the deal that you've negotiated with the new tenant. But what it does have is an advantage, and that is that because it's pre-printed, it seems to mean or tends to cause tenants and their lawyers to automatically accept the printed portion of the document and focus only on the schedule page, which sets out the things like the lease period, the rent reviews, etc., and the special condition that relate to the deal itself, to ensure that those reflect what's already been agreed, rather than them spending time poring over every clause within the lease itself. Now, if you've got a very complex property, yes, you will need a special drafted lease. But if you have a strata title office or a warehouse or something like that, that is basic and simple, straightforward property, the Law Institute lease is the one I would go for. Because as I said, you don't want them poring over the printed part, which is the main body of the lease, which relates to the performance. Now, strangely, people assume wrongly that because it's pre-printed and public document as far as the Law Institute's concerned, therefore you can't change those parts of the lease. And why is that important? Well, because the Law Institute lease, its definition of outgoing has been defined to include all reasonable costs to administer the premises. Now, what that means is that the tenant is actually obliged to pay your managing agent's fees as a condition of the lease. So in addition to all the other outgoings that are listed, and it's detailed and very clear, this throwaway line in there allows you to, and it means that you can engage your accountant to do it if you want to, not a smart move, but you engage a managing agent and his or her fees can be recouped under the terms of a Law Institute lease. And that's certainly an added benefit for every landlord.
I can now see there is far more to the structuring of the lease than may initially be apparent. And so, look, I'd just like to thank you for walking us through what actually happens behind the scenes.
Yeah, look, if you're not doing this every day, it can certainly seem a little daunting. But with the right advice, it's really not that difficult.
Anyway, I'm sure our listeners have certainly appreciated your input.